we're reading in 1 Samuel chapter number 17, verse number 51. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine, and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof, and slew him and cut off his head therewith. When the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And then in chapter number 21, verse number 8, verse number 9, the Bible said, and David said unto Ahimelech, is there not here under thine hand spear or sword? I have neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business requires haste. And the priest said, the sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom thou slewest in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here, wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. And thou wilt take that, take it. There is no other save that here. And David said, is the phrase I'm interested in. There is none like that. Yes, yes, yes. I guess if I had a phrase for the message this morning, it would simply be that. Yes, yes, yes. My emphasis is how God would take things that would ordinarily bring fear into our lives, that would be very dangerous and meant for evil, and somehow turn them around and use them for His glory. I'm thinking about this sword this morning. I guess, for instance, we could think about our testimonies as some have testified this morning. And as we look back on our testimony, there's so much that is in that testimony that involves, no doubt, some kind of an influence of evil, of the devil. The fact that we would testify infers that God has turned things around in our life. But there seemed to be so much that was evil. And the devil was having his heyday, having his way. And God did a miracle and brought forth a sword or a testimony. Sometimes it's in our personal lives. Sometimes it may be in the things that surround us, the people that surround us. Maybe a son or a daughter that the devil seems to be having his way with. He's hanged on him or her. But thank God the Lord has a way of activating and going into those lives that seem to be so lost and taking them away from the dead, taking them from the fire, and allowing them to be a sword in the hands of God's children as a testimony of what God can do. Now, there are simply three things that I want to suggest to you concerning this sword this morning. I want us to notice the invention of this sword, or who made it, produced it. I want us to also look at the intention behind this sword. What was the plan or the purpose? And then we're going to look at the intervention of this sword, or how God in His providence took it away from the king. Now, let's look first of all at what I would say is the invention of this sword. I notice that this sword is a sword of death, or of the Philistines. They were the ones who produced it. They were the ones who made it. This sword was made by the enemy. And it was their own personal invention, something that they brought forth. it would seem to me that somehow this sword that is so great, that David brings down the people, would be made by the hands of an Israelite or the son of Abraham, a child of God. But yet this sword that David qualifies by saying there's no sword like that. But yet this sword is made by the enemy. It is produced by those who are of God, as we say. And what you have to understand is that David knows swords. He himself held the sword of the king, Saul. You remember when he was going to fight Goliath. He went into the tent of Saul, and Saul tried to give him his armor and his sword. I would imagine that the sword of Saul, being the king of Israel, was probably a very good sword, skillfully and artistically created and made in its design, its weight, its balance, its temper, as far as steel. And David handled the king's sword. I thought of another occasion when Jonathan brought his sword. And David to David with his armor, signifying that he believed David would be the next king in Israel. And so David not only handled the king's sword, but he handled Jonathan's sword. And I would imagine probably that the same man or people who created Saul's sword probably created a pretty good sword for Jonathan, the son of Saul. David also is a man when he's in Saul's favor, is over thousands of soldiers. And if men in those days, or men like me in our days, no doubt they sat around and talked about the weapon of choice, which was the sword. Just like hunters in this day who will compare their rifles or their guns or whatever, and they'll talk about where they got them and what the make is and the model and so on. I'm sure as they sit around those campfires, that they talked about the swords and where they got their swords and who made their swords. And so when David makes this statement, he doesn't make it alternatively. He makes it by through experience. He knows swords. And he said, I want that sword because there is none like. The enemy has created a sword that cannot be found among the children of God. Isn't that amazing? I pondered that thought when it came to me. Through the Bible and through personal experience and through history, that it is the children of this world who are constantly meditating on inventions and creating things. All the way back to the first civilization, you realize that it was the sons of Cain who came up with the first musical instruments. I've been to Egypt, and they marvel to this day at the great inventions that came from the minds of the Egyptians. And those pyramids, the paintings in there are as vivid as if they were painted today. We can't reproduce that. Of course, the embalming is mind-boggling as to how they could do that back then that we can't also emulate. I thought about the purifying of gold and silver that Egypt had perfected. Just so much about their abilities as far as inventions were concerned and how they were able to perfect things in those days. And on down through history, it seems as though that when it comes to inventions, and I'm not saying 100%, but when it comes to the productions of this world, mostly it's the minds of the children of this world that are engaged in those creative activities. And I think the reason being is because once you become a child of God, you're not so much you're not so much concerned primarily with the functions of this world as you are the thoughts about another world. And how you get folks prepared for the other world. Jesus said it this way. He said that the children of this world are wiser in their generation than the children of the kingdom. And it's because this world is their home, while it is not our home. And that they are busy in their inventions, bringing forth their pyramids or their swords or their embalming or whatever it may be. The thing that I would suggest to you is that when this world makes something, and we have witnessed something, and when the devil goes to creating things, he doesn't do that magic. But he puts his all into it, and that it in itself will be amazing. It's about the modern inventions that we know about now that even 20, 30 years ago were so far removed, we wouldn't have believed that they would exist. We think about, of course, the internet. We think about the iPod, the iPad, the cell phone. I saw on TV the other day they are coming out. They actually had a car that would drive itself. I could use one of those. It's amazing to the inventions that are so mind-boggling that this world is constantly coming up with the technology. That is constantly being produced. And it's being produced in the minds of those who are the children of this world for the most part. I was thinking about 2 Corinthians chapter number 10. Paul said, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. In other words, we're not so busy as far as the physical is concerned. We realize we have to live, we have to work, we have to go through life, but inventions are not our number one priority. And Paul also said in 1 Corinthians 2, verse 4, my speech and my preaching was not with enticing words of man's wisdom, but in the demonstration of the Spirit and of the power. For you see, you're calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble, are called. I'm not saying this is 100% that some of God's people are not involved in stuff, but I'm thinking for the most part, it is the enemy that is doing most of the marvelous inventions that we know anything about in this hour and in this day. I said all that to say this as far as that. First of all, it's concerned, I'm afraid in this hour, that the church is trying to take on the mindset and the promotional functions of the world to do God's work with. I still believe it takes old-fashioned preaching and praying. It takes the work of the Holy Ghost and the cleansing power of the blood. And those things are not invented by the enemy. Those are God-given things. There's a process sometimes in so many churches, but it seems as though that they are taking on the methods of this old world to try to do the work of God with. If you can't compete with this world, you never hope to come out on top. You always outsmart you. And just when you think that you have caught up with the system, it will move on down the road with something new, and now you've got to change to compete with what's happening down the road. I think that we need to just let the world do what it's going to do, and we ought to deal with this matter of faith, and we ought to deal with this matter of letting God take care of the bears and the lions, and God help David to do so. And if the devil's got one soul to make, let him make it. That's his business, and it's not. And if this world is busy and it's invented, that's all. But I'm here to tell you, when it comes to the gospel and the kingdom of God, we don't need what this whole world is producing to get it done. so I'm thinking about this, the invention of this soap. Now, how David said there is no like it. And again, how that if the devil does something, or if the world does something, it can fall into it. It seems to be something to an angel of life. And he said unto Jesus, said unto Peter, he said, Satan has dissolved into sister. I'm here to tell if the devil's got a sister, it'll be the best one you've ever seen. I believe that those thorns that Satan sent after the Apostle Paul were the sharpest ones on the boat. They're not as sharp as that. I think that that silver and that gold was fully purified by the Egypt used to in the temple worship to the polytheistic gods. And I think that the devil's going to start a trial, as he did in the book of Daniel. In Babylon, he'll be seven times hotter than any fire you may have had anything to do with. I believe that if Haman's going to build a gallows, he'll multiply with, that it's going to be a gallows like you've never seen. In other words, this whole world will produce the best in what it does. But that shouldn't bother us because we're not in competition. With this old world. Talking about the inventions of these souls. Now, the second thing that I would bring to your attention, not only do we see the inventions of these souls, or of this soul, but I notice the intention of the soul. Gas has produced a soul that Goliath has put in the soul. This sword is made for by the enemy, but it is made for evil intention. This sword is made, if Goliath has his way, to sever the head of some child of God, some Israelite, from his sword. Everything about this sword, from beginning to end, has an evil intent to it. It is destructive. And it is harmful. And they intend to destroy. Now, let me say this. When it comes to the inventions of this world, they are not evil in and of themselves. The sword is not evil. The metal is not evil. The design is not evil. It's the intent that is evil. Now, I realize that some of us old timers, we'll look at some of this new stuff coming along and we'll just throw it all into evil basket. But it's not necessarily so in and of itself. Let me say that the computer is not evil in and of itself. Thank God for those who have been able to take and use it. I love to study, and I love to use the songs on it. It's a whole lot quicker than just clicking the old songs. If used right, it can be a blessing. It can be a blessing. But can it access? I came down the other day, and I hit this page, and the preacher and I like to hear a preacher, and I listen to the preacher. Now, there's a lot of inventions that I'm not mad that this world invented. I'm glad that we got electricity upon this, don't you? I'm thankful that you can hear. I'm glad that there's an air conditioner. I'm glad that there are many things that I couldn't have thought of, and I couldn't have made, I couldn't have invented. This whole world has invented it, but I used it, and I haven't been doing it. I'm glad for the cell phone. There's just not a wall up from my house to the roof to wherever I go. But I want to talk to my youngins to find out how my grandmothers are doing. And so anywhere we're at, we can talk to them every allow to be bad in your life. And I want you to know that as far as the sin of the world is concerned, as far as the devil is concerned, everything in this world is ever complete. And you have one intention. And that is to get your attention off the Lord and to control your time and to cause you to do things that should move. In other words, the intent, don't just fall into an evil in and of itself. The intention is evil. When the devil has an evil intention in this whole world, you take that internet and destroy you. You take that computer and destroy you. You use that cell phone and let you gossip and destroy people. Or you'll use the things that have been invented if you don't care for your own heart's sake. It'll hurt you. Young people are things being invented that we never knew anything about as children. And if you don't care for their own sake, if the devil has his way, it won't help you. It'll hurt you. The intent is only to be that way. I guarantee you that he's working overtime somewhere close by you because he is trying to bring something and build something that he can affect your walk with God with and he can destroy you with. And some of you, even in the last few days, have heard the grinding of the metal on the wheel pretty close to your situation. Maybe he's already set up his shop in the backyard or maybe somewhere in the house. And you realize when you start up late, boy, I'm going to tell you that's not good. What I'm seeing happening is not good. And I'll tell you the devil's at work. Have you seen him do that? In the past, in your life, or in the lives of one of your children, or your son, or your daughter, or somebody else around you, or what's unfolding as far as the job and things are concerned. And you look at it and you say, man, that's a sword right there. The devil, he's going to hurt me if he comes. God is going to know over there that sword has no purpose. And it's to destroy somebody on that side. And I want you to know, he's got something in mind. Now, the devil hates men because we're made in the image of God, as Joe said. But even deeper than that, he hates the child of God because we are made or formed into the image of Christ. And I want you to understand that this world will be acceptable to just about anything, whether it's an alternate lifestyle, or whether it's Hindu, or whether it's a Buddhist, or a Muslim. But you can tell from what's coming out of Washington, of the educational system, of what's coming out of the news media, that the only thing that it seems as though that it's okay to criticize and behave is an old-fashioned, Bible-believing, Christian child of God walks in the blood. And they can say all kinds of things evil about it, because I'm telling you, the picture is, that ends with the end time, and the devil is getting stored ready. And he will come, he's coming, he's coming after the church. You mark it down, you're coming up. Somebody said, well, don't you think we're going in the race? Well, it may be that God's going to let us do a little something before that even happens. We don't know. We don't know. But I'm going to tell you something, if the devil has his way, he's going to affect you. And he's going to affect the church. But it's his evil intention ever coming. That all of the things that are so mind-boggling that have been created, that they may be good in his life. But the devil has his way, they'll hurt you. And they'll destroy you. I'm talking about the invention of this world. I'm talking about the intention of this soul. But I want you to notice with your last, and this is what I wanted to get to. I want you to notice the intervention of this sword. I want us to notice that while the enemy has made this sword, the intention is so evil with this sword, God has a divine providence. And he masters this sword for David's good and God's glory. Now, I think Joseph said it well when he talked about his brethren. He said, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And isn't it amazing how God can take circumstances that seem to be so dark and so forlorn and so evil and turn them around in our lives? As a matter of fact, I would suggest that I believe that every child of God, somewhere in their past, has had a measure of the work of the devil take place. And God has taken that evil and turned it around and used it for his honor and for his glory. Now, he doesn't need the devil, but what he'll do is he'll hire the devil to do his work, and then he won't pay. And just when the devil gets something just about done to where he thinks he can use it for his purpose, God already has something in mind for what the devil is doing. And so he comes now, just in time, and here's my thought, as he draws the David sword, he comes now just in time, and he says, give me that. Think of all the energy, all the time, all the intelligence, everything that's been put into this sword to make what David said, the enemy knew it was the best sword that you could get, and just when he got to it, God said, I think I can use that. Give me that. Well, I know the devil wants us to fear at the dinner of the storm off of that soul. He wants us to tremble, and the children need to know that tremble. When they soon find him standing hugging that sword, but they didn't know what God had in mind for a sword made by the enemy. God is able to work in the darkest of places. That brings forth the light of the gospel and the peace of the honor and his glory. Just hold on to find out what God's trying to do and what the devil's working on. Think about it. Give me that. This is the intervention of the Lord working. And then God will. And then see that it was the children of Cain that come up with the first musical instrument. But it wasn't no child of Cain that was playing this piano. Well, the Lord said, give me that. Take it away from the devil to use for God's glory. Isn't that amazing? I thought about that gold and that silver that Ephraim had produced. I don't want to have evil intent because that's what they need to create their gods with. And their false temples and false gods. But when they left, when the children of Israel went left out of Egypt, God said, you fall, and you get that gold and silver. The faith, perfection, and purification, for God got me a tabernacle. I'm going to be around the land with it. And I'm going to use the devil's gold and silver to go with it. When you think about that gold, they don't know about no gold. They took it from the devil. There's so much in my life that I'm involved that was taken from the devil. There's so many things in my life like Paul's thorn in his flesh. I mean, the devil went out there and took the best thorns and the sacred thorns that he had, put them in the hands of the messenger, and sent them out there on the way. God said, maybe it looks good. And it took those thorns and brought that message and picked the apostle Paul. And the more it took them, the more Paul understood about the grace of God. I thought the devil had some sense about stuff like that. I thought about that fire. 7 times harder to put the children of God in. Someone said, well, why 7 times harder? He took them bones, he said, give me, Lord. They took out that bone, he said, give me, Lord. Philip's bone was not made, but it was faith that used it. Give me that. I think about my life and Joe's, and how we were raised back in the hills of West Virginia. Six of us boys and three girls, and no mother in the home. There wasn't nobody around us that lived on any high level. They were all poor. But because there wasn't no mother in our home, others really didn't know what went on there. So they wouldn't. I know in my case, I had friends that they didn't come to my house. I had to go to their house. And of course, there were things that went on, drinking and stuff like that all the time. But like I say, without any money. And I'm sure that everybody ever had any thought, there's no good going to come out of that. There's just no way. A drunken father, alcohol, and all of that other stuff going on. There's nothing good going to come out of that. And there wasn't supposed to be anything good. The devil orchestrated all of that and thought he was getting so lucky. He didn't have to worry about that. I mean, maybe the thing he was doing is all of them was going to hell, that was going to be all good. But then the Lord came by and said, looks like you worked that place right there, right in a good place for me. I picked a couple out of there. And I'm going to the Lord came by one day and used the book and brought in the gospel and saved us by his grace. You say, well, would you change anything about your fellows? Are you kidding? No way. You say that because that's the sword the devil wanted that God gave me. And every time I do that preach, what I do is I take that sword that God gave me, a testimony that came out of the past, of what I was raised in, and what we need to know. And God told me, and he said, look, here's a good sword, use it. Every time I do that, I take the devil's sword, and I guarantee you that he's taking it.
Lord said, give me that.
Huh? Give me that. I only know the history. Joe knows more about it. Being 13 when my mother left, I just didn't have hope, but I don't know the history of it. Then I had one on my brain all and realized that if you got a man and a woman together that can't stand each other, they shouldn't have any room. And obviously, they couldn't stand each other. They've got to kill each other. And so the Ephesians, that's another prophet. But they had one room. Yeah. They had an onion. And then it goes. They had an onion. And they had an onion. And they just had an onion. And all bad. All bad.
That the Lord's able to work in those dark areas and dark places and those situations in your life that seem to be so bad and bring forth glory. He said, give me that. It was Egypt that kept Moses for 40 years, trained him up to be the next king and get back to come to God all the way through. God said, give me that. Take it away from me. Several years ago, I was looking to try to find my mother. And someone had told me about a man down in West Virginia that his wife was good friends with my mother. So I thought, well, I'll go talk to him. And I did, but his wife had passed off the scene, but he enjoyed my fellowship with him. And he told me, he said, "I'm so glad." He told me, he said, "One day, my wife told me, she said, 'Pat, the man with the baby,' and said, 'I want to go up on the hill, don't you? I want to see it.' He said, 'I'll cut her up there.' She went into the house, and I looked across the road, and your daddy over there was laying block for a bit. So I already knew what he was doing. I heard he was building a bar. But he said, 'I pulled over there just to talk to him, and I said, "Who talks to you?" That's what they called him. He said, "What's the building?" He said, he didn't look up. He hollered and said, "A church." And I said, he said, I said, "You're not dead." He said, "Your daddy first little baby." He said, "That's what I said, wasn't it? I'm building a church." He went ahead and built that bar. I guess 2, maybe 3 years later, he killed a man again. Had to sell everything he had to get to one prison, pay the lawyers and everything. And one of the things he had to sell was the bar. Guess who bought it? You got it. A church bought it. It's still a church to this day. It was a bar 2 or 3 years, and it's been a church for 50 years. He didn't understand what he was doing. He thought he was just building. And the Lord looking at him as he built it up and said, "Get that block of soap right there. Hold on, I'll put some of the soap on there." And I just kept turning around. I imagine my dad probably said, "You know, that doesn't come together easy when you build my own building." He didn't know what he was building. My dad was a blessing about it. I was out there, he was preaching. I think it was one of my brother's funerals and one of my friends that I was raised up with. I went to the beginning when I was 14, so this many years ago that I was raised up with him. But anyway, he came to that funeral, and after the funeral, I got to talking to him, found out he was out there. And we were about the same age, and I said, "Well, Mike, I don't have time right now. I'll get home, and I'll call you, and we'll talk about the Lord." And so I got home, I called him, we got to talking, and I said, "Mike, tell me about how you got saved." I was here with him. First thing he said, "Well, bring him in," and he says, "You know that church I come on Bunker Hill?" I said, "I sure do." I didn't tell him, but my daddy did. He said, "There's a whole revival out there, 2 weeks of it. Somebody invited me to went, and he said, as a 16-year-old girl, I got born again." I said, "Hallelujah. My daddy built a church, and one of my best friends got saved." Somebody said, "How did that happen?" Well, I said, I like it when he takes things away from the devil, don't you? He's able to do so. You know, there was some fellas one day that went out there and cut a tree down. They got the healing on that tree and made 2 parts. And put them 2 parts together. And they called it a cross. Evil intent for that cross. And the Lord come by and said, "You do that. I think I'll take it out on a hill outside of Jerusalem. Put it right there," and he said, "If I be lifted up, I'll draw all men unto myself." Luke said, Jesus said this, "The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified." He said, "I'll think about that." It may be somewhere in the heart of you. In some situation in your life, you can hear the grinding on the stone. And it seems so bad. But give God a chance. He can take it away from you. But can you imagine the life the night before the big fight? He's up there on the hill, and everybody's seen that story. They scared to death of it. He's very real talk. And he's doing this. You know what he's doing? Anybody know what he's doing? words of God, the Lord said, put that on my feather, tuck it along the other side. So that 16-year-old boy is going to need that tomorrow. I don't want him to have to do anything. I just want him to be able to lay that thing right across. Set it out here. And say, give me that. The thing that the children of Israel feared the most became God's greatest tool in the hand of his child. The Lord may be letting the devil do a little work for you. Don't get too upset. When you hear him out there tonight, if he's grinding, just roll over and holler out the window and say, hey, can I get that thing going? The Lord may have something in mind. Don't look at things as they are. Look at them as how God can make them. Don't look at that son lost. Don't look at that daughter in sin, still right with the Lord. Don't look at that job loss as a bad situation. See it as an opportunity for God to provide. Give